Hello and welcome to the Vet Blast podcast. I am your host, Dr. Adam Christman, Chief Veterinary Officer here at Fetch DVM 360.
Multimodal pain management. There's so many different options that are out there, and I can't think of anyone better to chat and walk us through some of the modalities that are out there than our wonderful friend and colleague, Dr. Matt Brunke, is in the house. How are you, my friend?
I'm great, Adam. How are you doing?
Well, it's good. Good to see you as always. We just saw each other at the Fetch National Harbor Conference, so thank you so much for being there. And what did you think? It was our first time there.
Oh, I loved it. I mean, look, I'm biased because I'm in the DC area, so it was a short commute, but it was a fantastic location and so many people came and there was really good questions. I'm looking forward to it being there again.
Yeah, oh, thank you. Yeah, your sessions were always so good. And I don't want to steal the thunder because there is a part that we're going to talk about, but to the listeners, he has a great talk on nutraceuticals. And I feel like everybody, including pet owners, needs to really sit through his talk on that because it was really, eye-opening. So it's fantastic. And Matt Brunke is grew up in New York City, East Coast, West Coast.
Always.
We can't say, no, we're just kidding to everybody on the West Coast. Brunke and I are all from the East Coast. We could say that. But he received his DVM from Boston University School of Veterinary Medicine in St. Kitts, and he received his certification in rehab in 2008 from the University of Tennessee CCRP program. He's also certified in pain management and in acupuncture, and he completed the practice experience pathway for the American College of Veterinary Sports Medicine and Rehabilitation in 2017 and is boarded in that. And as a diplomat of the VSMR College, Dr. Brunke believes in big picture and practical approach to his patients and enjoys both orthopedic and neurological cases where he practices at Veterinary Referral Associates. And when he's not working, he has an adorable dog, Penny, loves to hike, and he's just an incredible human being. And we're so honored to have him in this profession. So thank you for all the great work that you do.
Very humbling, Adam. It takes one to know one. So I'll take that and we'll move along.
Yes, absolutely. Okay. We throw out the word multimodal approach to pain management a lot. And I feel like from my colleagues that are generalists like myself, we think of, are we going to do an NSAID and a nutraceutical? And maybe we just stop there. Mm-hmm. So walk us through a little bit of when we say multimodal, what are some of the options that are out there?
Right. I think let's start off with my favorite field, which is arthritis, right? We can blend back into multimodal for other things, but multimodal at its heart is a team approach, right? Yeah. You have to look at the whole patient, right? You can't just say, hey, here's a pain med. Okay. We know there's four or five different pain pathways, right? We know that there's different levels. Are we having pain at the level of the surgical site or arthritic joint in this case, or is it more pain perception up in the brain and along those areas? So we need a team approach, and that may be some work fast, some work later, right? Some take a little bit longer time. So we just have to figure out what the patient really needs and then address the patient as a whole.
Yes. And you recently just wrote a paper on joint injections, right?
Right. So there was a great article. Well, I thought it was great. We had a really good team effort from two of my interns, Emma Fralin and Gabriella Medrano. Both helped me with a paper on what's the latest evidence of joint injections for managing arthritis that was in DVM 360 just recently.
And a high level, what does that entail? What does it talk about?
So that's really cool, right? And thanks for this, Adam. Like, look, the standard of care in horses for managing arthritis and synovitis, which we're going to get into in a minute, is joint injections. And the standard of care for humans is joint injections. But nobody injects joints in small animal. I think that needs to change. Because Adam, did you get into vet med to push pills?
No.
Did you get into vet med to euthanize animals over arthritis?
Oh gosh, no.
Okay. Right. There was a study out of the UK that 40% of dogs in the study were euthanized just because their arthritic pain that couldn't be managed.
Oh gosh.
Okay. So we need to be thinking about joint injections as internally targeted therapy. Right? We'll talk about some external targets like laser and shockwave as well, but internal targeted therapy. And this is because, I'm going to ask another fun question for everybody to think about. We all get taught that arthritis is a cartilage disease, right, Adam?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay, Adam, back me up. You went to Iowa State, I went to Ross, but
Yeah.
they also taught us that cartilage does not have nerve endings.
Right.
Okay, Adam, why is arthritis painful?
I don't know. I don't know why. No, I mean,
No, and that's a good, it's okay. I'm going to tell you why, right? The most amount of nerve endings are in the synovium, the joint capsule. And no, we don't get taught that, right?
Right.
So we have to think about the joint capsule as providing the microenvironment for a healthy joint. And if we can keep the joint capsule happy, now we can make better joint fluid, we have less pain, we have better mobility. So the whole root of it is arthritis is not a cartilage disease, it's a synovial disease.
Oh, I love that. And so when we're doing these joint injections, Matt, we're going right into that area, that joint capsule.
Right,
And
exactly. We're doing them under sedation because if,
yeah.
right, human medicine, they're like, cool, stare at the ceiling and here's this big giant needle, right? And
Yes.
also drive yourself home. We can't do that with our dogs and cats. I inject cat joints too for arthritis. So we sedate them, we find our landmarks, we get some joint fluid out so we know we're in the joint, and we could always send that off to the lab if we need to. But now we put in an injectate, right? What do we put in? Do we put in cortisone? Do we put in stem cells? Do we put in synovetin? Do we put in arthrimid? Do we put in all these other things to address the microenvironment of that joint? And we put it right where it needs it.
Yeah, I had, as you know, I had a herniated disc earlier this year, and I had my very first introduction to an epidural. And holy Kelly Clarkson is really what I gotta tell you.
Well, and that's right. How much pain relief can you get from an
Yeah.
epidural, right? And if we're talking about multimodal pain management, we're going to bounce around, right? And I love it because that's what Adam and I do,
Yes.
right? Is right. So we think about epidurals in veterinary medicine very perioperatively, right? Maybe we're using them for cruciate surgeries or other things, but we can use epidurals, and there's evidence. It's not just me saying this. There's good evidence to support using epidural steroids for lumbosacral disease in dogs. And so you had low back pain, Adam. How did it
Yes.
feel?
The worst pain I've ever experienced in my life.
Okay. And yet, this is the number one reason why any police dog on earth is retired, is that same exact thing. So these dogs who have served, or pet dogs, or cats, we even treated some zoological species for it, right? For our
Right.
zoo colleagues out there. LS disease, just like arthritis, are one health problems, and we
Yes.
can do better about treating them targeted.
You know, you work closely with Paws of Honor. And to the listeners, if you don't know who that is, Matt can share with you a little bit more. But we celebrated two of them over the weekend at National Harbor. And I was talking to the one, and correct me if I'm wrong on this too, but please. But he said the before and after of the joint injections was night and day for his dog. I mean, these are dogs that have worked so hard. And now, you know, they're retired and whatnot. And now they come to see you to help manage their pain. And he was saying, like, you're giving him a whole new leash on life with this dog.
We get lucky. When things work 85% of the time, it means it
Yeah.
doesn't work 15, but we're usually doing better than even. A couple of things there. So Paws of Honor is a 501c3 that is based out of the DC area. That is now 10 years old, that I'm lucky to be a part of and on the board of directors for. And its mission statement is this, right? Pay the vet bills for the re dogs that are here, that are heroes, right? And retired working dogs, whether it's federal, state, or local, have all served our communities. And there is no VA for canines. So when a dog retires, it's usually retired to its handler. So it's been part of its family, and they have pre-existing conditions. So pet insurance isn't going to cover things. And these huge bills now are on the families that this dog has been their partner and has saved their life countless times. So Paws of Honor, in conjunction with Canine Hurricanes Heroes, are two of the groups that I work with that just help fundraise and pay bills so that the handlers don't have to.
Oh, it's fantastic. Now, thank you
Yep.
for doing that.
Yep.
Okay, so joint injections we talk about. We also talk a lot about you're a rehab specialist. We talk about movement and we talk about exercises to help them, you know, get up and down from certain things. So how involved is that, or how important is it for these patients to move? Because not to cut you off on this, but I do think it's almost like a I don't know what you want to call it. Like, you don't want them to move because they're painful, but you want them to move. And the more rehab classes that I sit in is that you do want them to move. And there's some basic mobility exercises that you can do. So share with us what that entails.
Yeah. Right. We talked about in the beginning, multimodal approaches, team approach. I always say a therapeutic injection, whether it's into a joint or into the epidural space for me, is one part of the puzzle. My job is to identify the pain and knock it down with an injection. That's my bare minimum goals. But we have to look at the patient as a whole. 3 out of 4 dogs are now qualified as obese, Adam.
Oh.
And right? And almost 3 out of 4 cats also qualify as obese. So we have to look at the patient as a whole. We have to go, okay, we know it's wrong. That's our job as diagnosticians. We've made the pain feel better, but how do we make the whole patient as a whole better is weight loss, nutraceuticals, exercise, right? There was a really, it's just a key, right? If you don't use it, you lose it. So if you're not moving, you're gonna lose muscle mass. And joint injections or other things that I do are gonna have longer efficacy when we get that patient from being chubby to being fit, to being a normal BCS. And also, like, nothing beats exercise, right? For management of arthritis, whether you're a dog, cat, horse, or human, nothing beats daily low impact exercise and being a lean body mass. So exercise is key. Go walk the dog. Why did you guys all get dogs? We didn't get them to put them into strollers or handbags.
Right.
Dogs are part of our community. And so go walk your dog. Get out and be a part of that and help them to move.
Everyone wins that way. Everyone wins. And you're an acupuncturist, so touch a little bit on about acupuncture.
Yeah, of course. I think it's fascinating with all the cool science equipment that we have, right? MRIs, CTs, everything else. Acupuncture was figured out 4,000 years ago with none of that. And it correlates so well to what we understand about trigger points and myofascial planes and causes of neurological pain and orthopedic pain. It astounds me. So we can use acupuncture as part of that multimodal approach. Again, some patients are going to respond to it really well. And I really like it for paralyzed patients because you can work with them there and you can help them. There's really good evidence for using electroacupuncture for things like LS disease as well. So those are key. And I think pretty much trying to learn more about that, go find anything written by Curtis Dewey. Okay. Dewey is the man. He just publishes so much on stuff and is very practical. What I really appreciate about him is he never talks over us. He just talks us till we understand it. And he's done some great work on the field of acupuncture.
Excellent. Yeah, acupuncture for the win for sure. And we also talk a lot about shockwave therapy and laser therapy. I know many of you tuning in have utilized some of those modalities, but what are some of the indications for either or both? What does that look like?
Yeah, I think we're still learning those two. And it's kind of like, you know, Adam, when you have a headache, do you take acetaminophen or do you take ibuprofen?
Yeah, I know. It's like what works for me may work a little bit different for you.
And those are hard, right? So like with laser therapy, I think it's really helpful for wounds. I think it's really helpful for incisions and things. The hard part that I have with arthritis management is we need lasers a lot. And sometimes that's not always practical for the families to come into the clinic. There are now some lasers out there that have good evidence for families to use at home on their pets. So I think some of the stuff that's coming out now with the evidence to support it is really helpful.
Yeah.
But then again, like shockwave therapy, which I know sounds weird, right? Shocking. We're not doing electroshock therapy, but we're using sound waves to modify how tissues heal. And most of those now we can use like the PulseVet system, right? That we can use that every 2 to 3 weeks, maybe 3 or 4 treatments and get 6 months or so of improvement. So that's pretty practical to me. So they can come into the clinic, we can treat them, get them into some rehab exercises and underwater treadmill and be still doing now that external targeted therapy.
Yeah. I have Clark W. Griswold, as you know, who decided, oh, let me be a pit bull and see if I can like partially tear my cruciate ligament. Nice little 9-pound guy. And I've done shockwave therapy on him and it really has helped with his ligament and his stifle. So far, so good, you know, but it does help manage things, which I think is great. What about targeted pulse electromagnetic field therapy or TPEMF?
Yeah, TPEMF is another cool thing where it actually got used on humans first, and we brought it over to the animal health side. It actually got used originally in women going through breast cancer surgery, right? And they showed that the patients, as compared to placebo, had less scarring, better mobility, and less pain. And then both NC State's vet school and AMC up in New York did two stu each did a study looking at dogs going through hemilaminectomies, which, as a dachshund dad, you're all too familiar with.
Yes.
And the TPEMF devices, like the Assisi loop in those studies, the dogs, compared to placebo, needed less pain meds. They got out of the hospital a little bit faster, and they actually returned to walking a little bit faster. So these are things that can be things for to engage the pet parent to do at home. They can be used in the clinic, of course, but they can also be at home. And so that's a great way to have that team approach. I'm kind of transitioning from multimodal to team approach because we got to get all these different aspects and these different team members to help out in the recovery and management of these pets.
I love what you're saying here, and I want to go a little further with this because I cannot agree with you more about engaging the pet parent at home. Even before COVID, I don't think it was as prominent as it is now, where pet owners really want to be proactive, especially with their pain management for their dogs and for their cats. They have the Assisi Loop Lounge now where they can sleep on the bed and the owners can be with them. They even have the loop. They can do massage therapy at home, physical therapy exercises like you're talking about. And I think it is so crucial when we talk about compliance and adherence. Having them partake in part in a component or two of their pain management. And I'm curious with you as a rehab specialist, how involved do you get them?
We have to, right? The whole point of having an animal is to be part of that human-animal bond,
Yes.
right? So whether it's my police dogs, where it's their partners, we have to get them back into shape. They're the uber athletes, but also the support animal, right? And helping all these animals that are in pain, we have to have that buy-in of the team because the whole point is they're living in the environment with their families. They're not living at the veterinary hospital. And so what do we do to get them involved? Because they're going to see that animal 99% of the time. We're only going to see it 1% of its time. So getting them involved to be, hey, can you do these two, three simple exercises? Can you feed the animal a little bit less? Or can we use different treats to try to work on that obesity issue? And then, Adam, I think you've probably seen it with your other training and stuff. People will do stuff for their pets that they won't do for themselves.
Totally.
Right. So if I say, hey, look, your dog's chubby, and the research shows us that fat dogs live 2 years less than their lean body counterparts. So it's not only quality of life, but quantity of life. I know if I can get a pet parent and family to go walk the dog and lose weight for their arthritic dog, they'll start losing weight themselves. They'll do the
Yes.
buy-in for their animal, not for themselves. You agree, Adam?
100%. Absolutely. They're more willing to, not take their dog to McDonald's versus them going to McDonald's instead, just because it's a matter of like quality of life for them. So yeah, I love that. Okay, to the listeners, guess what we did not talk about yet? Look at all, I just want to take a step back. Look at all the things that we've talked about, and yet we did not even talk about nutraceuticals and NSAIDs yet, which I think is so great though, Matt, that we actually have all these other options that are out there. Because before you go into it, I want to get your take on this. Is there a negative connotation sometimes when they say we're going to put them on, say, like an NSAID or a drug? Do they want to go for something else first versus trying, like, I'm using air quotes because you can't see me, but the word drug?
No, it's a great point, right? They don't always want it. But when I think about arthritis management, my first line defense is an NSAID, right? Carprofen, right? And yeah, there was a negative connotation in the 90s and early 2000s, for those of you out there who remembered it, when Rimadyl was the R word. And now I'm using air quotes, right? We didn't know it was bad in the Labrador communities, right? It just killed dogs. That's not the case, right? We learned about idiosyncratic reactions and how to screen patients appropriately. But you're right. If they only have one or two joints, or even three or four joints that hurt, why are we challenging them systemically? So yeah, if we can do other things, great. But NSAIDs are still our first line defense, still have our best evidence, and they're usually going to help the animal to feel better within 3 or 4 days. So that's a big step to the pet parent now is going, holy cow, my animal's in pain. We know as clinicians, that animal's probably been in pain for a month or more. So how do we help unwind that? NSAIDs are a big help. And then maybe we do transition, right, to talk about nutraceuticals?
Yeah. Yeah. And I want to say, before you go into that, the fact that when you talk about NSAIDs, I feel like in the negative connotation of the word drug, I feel like we as veterinary professionals have a responsibility to educate them on that too. When we talk about safety and efficacy profiles of all these ones that are out there, and you know, you pick your flavor, whatever one works mm-hmm. well for you in your clinic or what you see with your experience. But regardless of the fact that, you know, they're FDA approved, the safety and efficacy profiles are really good, and we do monitoring profiles, just to your point. So I think that's important that we mention that, right?
It's huge. You're right. I'm glad you pointed back down to it, because we have to be able to use things with safety and confidence that we're not breaking rule number one. Say right. it with me, Adam. What's rule number one together? Do no harm.
Yes.
Right. So we
did with the dogs barking.
Right. But we have to do that, right? So we want to go with evidence and support that we're doing the right thing, that we're not causing any further pain or have a higher risk of problems. And yeah, that's owners may say, oh, it's a drug. Ooh, I don't. Yeah, but hey, this is where we have the evidence to support it. And now, yeah, if you respond to it, the best thing you can do is recheck that dog in a couple of weeks or that cat and go, okay, did this work? Yes, it did. No, it didn't. Okay, even if it did, now what's your long-term goals, right? Maybe that's how we phase into other things as part of this multimodal approach of arthritis is, okay, we got the pain down. Now what do we do?
Love that. And I think a big myth to the pet owner side of things is once a veterinarian diagnoses osteoarthritis or synovial disease, they're like, oh, let's just put them on a hip and joint supplement right away. That's going to cure it. And I feel like that's not it. And I remember sitting in your lectures about starting, and I want you to share this with the listeners mm-hmm. too, but you do mention about starting these animals earlier on in their life about some sort of a nutritional, a nutraceutical. So talk to us about that.
Yeah, I think, you know, we have to look at these and go, it's not a drug, right? There's still some regulation, but we still have to be careful about safety, efficacy, source, all those things. But the biggest thing that we have to worry about is evidence and being proactive. So if we know that the dog's going to be doing a lot of walking and climbing, let's say it's a, you know, a police dog to some degree, it's really active. Yeah, nutraceutical may be part of my plan on that, along with staying lean and staying active. So getting them early in the disease process for any management of arthritis is important, but also what evidence do we have? And the thing is, right, the most evidence we probably have is for the omega-3 fatty acids, right? The hard part that I have with omega-3s is most dogs are already fat, and about a decent percentage of dogs, maybe about 1 in 3 or so, have lower GI distress from being on fatty stuff. And so those are hard to do, but the evidence is there that they are probably the best nutraceutical for joint health, but they have to be dosed appropriately. And so that's they have to be dosed between 100 to 200 mgs per kg per day of EPA and DHA. And to put that in perspective, you know, there's dermatological conditions that are 1/10 of those doses. So it's always reading between the lines of making sure we're dosing it appropriately. But yeah, a hip and joint supplement can be helpful, but it's not a cure-all for these, and it's not a replacement. And in fact, I think one thing that's trying to stay up with the latest evidence, there was it's probably news to some people out here, and that's okay. I know it's totally hard in our profession to stay up to date on all the evidence, but there's a 2022 systematic review and meta-analysis, Adam, I think, out of the... that publishes open access that no longer recommends the use of glucosamine and chondroitin for the management of OA in dogs and cats. Yeah. They did a full review and said there's not enough evidence here to support it. In fact, there's enough evidence to show that it doesn't work in most patients. And that's tough, but that's the news and the updates.
So then what about, I know this because I sat in your lecture and you taught me this, but what about the ones where you see active ingredients such as UC2 or eggshell membrane or green-lipped mussel?
Yep. So that's great ones, right? That's what has the latest evidence, right? UC2, undenatured type 2 collagen, has been studied now for about 10 years in multiple species, and it's got reasonable to good evidence out there. And it's not just me saying that. Those systematic reviews found that as well. So UC2 is one out there. Eggshell membrane is another one that's come out lately. So it's taking that inner lining from an eggshell and going, does this have some of the properties of what our joints need? And the answer is yes. And the research is reasonable, right? In the key with any of these, though, is certain manufacturers, when they make it, right, they make it their way and they study it under their conditions. But the way you make chocolate cake, Adam, is probably different than how I make chocolate cake, right? They're not directly comparable when we're talking about it when from one eggshell membrane or any of these to somebody else's. So you have to always look at that company's evidence for why they put that in their joint supplement. They're all made slightly differently, old proprietary blend type thing.
Right. Yeah, it's great. And to the listeners, I think everyone's got, you know, we have all of our reps, and this is why we go to, you know, continuing education to learn about what's new and what's out there. Because you could really lose your mind, because clients can come up to you in the exam room and show you photos of all these different ones that are out there in addition to diet. So it can be a little overwhelming. But I remember you said once to just kind of streamline that a little bit, choose three or four in a doctor's meeting or at a practice. So that way you can be aligned, and that way you can kind of stand behind them, because there's a lot of good ones that are there, but there's a lot of, you know, not so good ones.
And that's the thing, it can be overwhelming. Absolutely right. Keep it simple, but also remember that just because, you know, here's the bottom line on these, right? Are they even doing anything? There's a human study that showed that most of them don't. But also, some of these can be, when the palatability is so high with these, there are reports, our friends and colleagues at the ASPCA Poison Control Hotline have a percentage of cases that animals that just overeat joint supplements because they're so palatable, and they go into multi-organ failure and die.
Wow.
So go back to rule number one, do no harm, right? Make sure it's not contaminated, make sure it's from a good and reasonable source, and keep it off the low counter. Right, the dog will be like, "Oh, it's an old dog. It can't reach up on the table." Mm-mm. It will knock it over if it's working. Its hips feel better, or its elbows feel better. Maybe it jumps up on the counter, or eats the whole bottle, and winds up in the ER. And you don't want that.
And lastly, are you seeing a lot of clients reaching for like the endocannabinoid system to choosing something in that area? Oh, I know you want a whole thing on that.
We could do a whole podcast series just on CBDs. CBDs are similar to nutraceuticals in that they are not direct pharmaceuticals. So again, the way one company makes it is not the way somebody else makes it. Full credit to my mentor and friend, Joe Washlag. Joe did the original evidence on what is now the Elevate CBD. And that's the one that actually has got evidence to support its use for OA. But Joe also did a paper, and I can add, maybe we can put these in the show notes. There was a paper that Joe did where he took a whole bunch of different CBD off the shelf, brought it back to his lab, and just said, "What do you have in you?" And a large percent of them had toxic metals, heavy metals, toxins, and some of them didn't have CBD at all. Some of them, in fact, had THC in them. So we got to be really careful. It's the complete wild west out there on all these supplements.
Yeah, it is. I know they're trying to streamline a lot more with like third party analysis and making sure that the claim is what it's supposed to claim that it is, and an entourage effect of having multiple endocannabinoids where the 1+1 = 4 kind of effect. So, you just have to do your research as veterinarians, because I'll tell you this, your clients and pet owners are really doing it as well. So you just have to kind of have some sort of discussion in the exam room with the legalities too. There's some of that depending on the state that you live in. So As we're wrapping up, Dr. Brunke, what would be one piece of advice you give to the listeners out there? We talked about so many things today on there, and maybe it could be a little overwhelming. You always think of spectrum of care top of mind. I'm thinking just to the listeners, I'm thinking for you. All right, he talked about all these different things. How do I approach the client when there's all these different recommendations out there? Because it could be overwhelming. So what would be a piece of advice you would give?
I'm going to give you two, and they're both going to be pretty straightforward. One, don't be afraid to say, "I don't know, and let me go check." Okay? Talk with colleagues, communicate. Our ability to be a good community is awesome, so keep learning. And then two, we have one of the coolest jobs in the world, right? Our job is to pet pets, right? Feel it. You know, if you're scared, you're like, "I don't know how to diagnose arthritis," just pet the dog or the cat. And if it hurts on one side and it doesn't hurt on the other, or it licks its lips on one side and doesn't lick its lip when you touch the other side, It's telling you something. So just feel for asymmetry when you palpate. You don't have to know all the fancy tests and terms, but get to those, because that's how you can at least identify it. And now you can speak from a position of power going, hey, I know where this is not right. Let's look together on how to make it better.
Love that. Yeah, I love having clients take videos of their dog's gait too. Huge. And I put it in 0.5 mode, you know, slow it down.
Absolutely.
Yeah, because that helps.
And I ask them questions. And for our technicians that are listening too, and our assistants, right? Like, you can find these in the history questions. Ask them when they're coming in for their annual exam. Hey, when was the last time your dog went upstairs? Oh, it doesn't go upstairs. Why? Did you block off the stairs? No, it just got old. Uh-uh. Age is not a disease. Dogs don't stop going upstairs because they turned 9. They stop going upstairs because that movement hurts them.
Yes. So just
listen to them. Get in the history questions. You'll start to find it, guys.
Right. Dr. Matt Brunke, thank you so much for sharing your expertise and your friendship and being awesome as always. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. It's always a pleasure, Adam.
If you want to learn more about Dr. Matt Brunke, he's at Veterinary Referral Associates. You can check him out online at vravet.com. And thank you so much for tuning in, my friends. Don't forget to rate the podcast as we're continuing to grow. I think we're approaching 400 episodes now. That's a lot. It's a lot of words.
You're the best at it, Adam. Thanks for being
here. Please. Thank you so much. And thank you for tuning in. And we'll see you next time right here on the Vet Blast podcast. Take care, everyone.
Thank you for listening to the Vet Blast podcast with me, Dr. Adam Christman. Tune in next time. Remember, take care of your animals and always stay pawsome.